Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Nerves I really didn't really understand existed or how they existed, so this is a very quick talk because I know very little about it. So the nerves I want to talk about are the cranial nerves, CN, and they're, well, it's more than 10 of them, I believe, but they're numbered for convenience, CN1 up to CN5, CN10, so forth. And I must admit, I didn't really fully understand them or the reason they're there, simply because I uploaded my knowledge of the nervous system really from from school books, which had a fairly simple, easy to understand thing, a central nervous system and a peripheral nervous system. And these cranial nerves are not definitely not the central nervous system. So the central nervous system really refers to the spinal cord and the brain, and the peripheral nervous system refers to all the other nerves. And as you draw it, it's a fairly simple drawing. It's a brain, a spinal cord, it's a central nervous system, and you have a central you've got a spinal fluid, which goes up to the cerebral fluid, and there's a brain boundary, a blood barrier around this entire thing. So really, your brain has got a extension of the spinal cord, and when you're going into it, look at it, there's medulla, pons, and midbrain, three little mini sections of starting brain, but it's sort of half spinal cord, half brain. And then you've got a thymus, parabellum, which is the back spongy part of brain, and then you've got the white matter and the cerebellum at the top, where your consciousness is. And I don't know, the level taught at school, I think, is just spinal cord, cerebellum, and parabellum. It's all this other structure going on. And, for me, it was, this other thing you'd read about, and you say, well, that doesn't quite fit in with a simple story. So it's a little bit more complex, than, just the nerves going down the spinal cord. In fact, these particular nerves that I'm going to talk about, they sort of get right up at the top of the spinal cord. They sort of effectively come almost straight out of the brain wall. The CN5, cranial nerve number 5, comes right up the top, and there's no need to be in the spinal cord because they operate within the head. There's no point actually getting very much involved in the spinal cord. And these ones here go to salival glands, eating glands, the mouth glands, all the nerves within your head. They branch out into branch out into three and doubled left and right, and there's various glands, salival glands, and stuff like that. So they're evidently linked into the brain proper because you salivate and things like that. So I'm aware of it. That under stress, you can get your jaw to clamp too tightly, and you can give yourself pain. Toothache. Well, yeah, they're the teeth nerves. And it sort of makes sense that your tongue is hooked to your brain, not via your spinal cord. And that your tongue, nerves in your tongue are not are not part of the central nervous system. So that's, I suppose, interesting to know. And just going back, I've got to remember about the taste buds. I'll have to go back and relearn the taste buds. I know there's taste buds on the side of your tongue, little islands, and the actual, again, a lot of the theory of taste, even though it's more than thoroughly discredited. It's still been taught at schools. This is that there's areas of taste. Your tongue has localities of taste and what taste buds are. And that there are these slot taste buds on the edge of your tongue. You can actually taste things. So it makes sense. I can do it. Where you roll the food around and you can actually taste it. And then there's these sort of guard taste buds, which are a zone to picking up bitter taste and to stop you stop you swallowing poison, basically, or alkalides. And they taste the bitter taste. I just got to sour is acid. Bitter is basically alkali. Well, alkalines, so all of the plant's toxins, rather than actually being acid, are basic. So if something's going to poison you, if plants to poison you, you have these ring of taste buds at the back of your tongue. So it's that's interesting to know and to actually understand that the sensation of taste is actually synthesized through olfactory smell and taste and texture and crunch. There's a whole lot of things that you go through to make a taste. And so again, that's a textbook thing of the five senses, and they want to, you hear with your ears, you see with your eyes, you taste with your tongue. But of course, it's a suite of senses with which you taste with. But all of that is your cell, your scent is taken almost straight into your brain. There's almost the shortest distance there, and apparently some various worms which cross into your brain and burrow out your brain climb up your nose, all these little bugs. Apparently I'll have to find out and get eat your brain in from your going inside your nose. Not just that, but also pathogens and stuff like that. So don't pick your nose. That's CN5, and that sort of is just a wake-up call. I'm sure a lot of people say, you know what happens a lot of the time when I study these things, I say, oh, we've missed this, or this is the wrong, oh, I knew it all along, and they say, oh, it's pretty obvious, and then you go observe their class, and they teach exactly what the boy's been teaching. Quieter side, we don't want to complicate it, do we? But unfortunately, life is a bit complicated. So getting back to it, the central, reached a flat section here, so I won't be breathing so much as I do this. So your nerves, what exactly is a nerve? A nerve is a bundle of nerve fibers, or really is a bundle of axons. An axon is the elongated communication part of a nerve cell. So a nerve has dendrites or hairs above the cell body. Depends how it's structured, and these hairs have neurotransmitters or neuroreceptors, and these are basically chemical detectors, channels, which are opened by these basic chemicals called neurotransmitters, which tend to be rather simple, flat, ringed molecules. So far I haven't seen a neurotransmitter which isn't one, so that's interesting. Serotonin, dopamine, acetylcholine, that's how you pronounce it. A whole lot of things like that. And what happens is they go to the cell body. The cell body initiates a repolarization wave, or depolarization wave. So your cell nerve fiber has an axon, which is a long, gangly, long thing, which is transmitted from it in general, except for that's the general structure. But pyramidal cells are in your brain, which are key thinking ones, are slightly different. So they're fairly interesting ones. But these ones basically have a sodium and potassium are one above each other, or potassium's below sodium, and so these are ions, so basically got a different proximity charge around them. They're both charged, but sort of the size and charge of it means that they're slightly different, a bit more polarizable, easier to move the electron around in them, and these exchange, and although we talk about currents, it's possibly best to discuss ion exchange. So sodium goes up and potassium goes in, and these particular ones can go through channels which open and close. But the important thing here is that cell repolarization has to occur with energy. You have to put energy into a cell for it to repolarize. And what I think happens, from what I can understand, is that there's these proteins inside the cell which can be mechanically flipped around, and when they do, they put a capacitive polarization on the outside of the shell, the nerve sheath, I suppose is what you call it. And so this, they physically rotate around, or there may be some other aspect that they do it. I've got to really go back and look at that molecule and get into my head. But there is sort of fundamental cell fibers or cell molecular dynamics in it. And this means that I think it is sodium gets pushed out and potassium rushes in, or vice versa. And it, potassium goes up to the one end of the molecule, the other end of the molecule goes across, creates a polarization field which holds the sodium on the outside. And so, you actually, it's a bit like a capacitor, not like a battery, I suppose, a cross between a capacitor and a battery. And what happens is that there's a cascade effect. When it breaks down at one section, it creates, it releases the polarization, which then releases the ions, and the it's basically like a domino effect. These molecular dominoes go inside, and it's the repolarization of these molecules inside. And of course, the activity which you can see, obviously, is these ions rushing in and out of a a membrane, but it's not necessarily the pores, which open, are not necessarily the thing which is triggered. It's not suddenly they open the holes. As far as I can see, the actual molecules flip. So it's a bit of molecular flipping. The ions move out. So it's not so the ions want to get back in there. They're locked up by these holes, their pores. They're actually held there because a more polarized section of the molecule is butting up against the membrane, which is actually creating a field which is holding preferentially ions to it. So this process transmits a nerve pulse. Now, going down. Now, of interest to me is a nerve called the vagus nerve. Now, pons. The end of your brain just looks like a stump, but when you actually get into it, it's quite complex. There's a section sitting above something called a pons, and then really I've forgotten the name of the actual component A. Yeah, there you go. So this is the entire aim, just to try and remember. But there's something called the vagus nerve, which actually comes from the Latin called the wandering nerve. And in terms of the systematic numbering of nerves, just sort of rather like, it's CN10. And for some reason they tend to give it Roman numerals. I don't know how. I think obviously people have some sort of periodic table involved. And I don't know what do you call CN5, sympathetic or parasympathetic. So there's a strict separation of definition of nerves, but of responses, but you've got these things where you want to send a message throughout your body to all cells. You pop out into your bloodstream chemicals, and so you have these chemical factories, hormone factories, which sit at critical points. So they've evolved at critical points. There's one which is the pineal gland or pituitary glands. Two different, I think they might be two different glands, sit underneath the brain, just dangling out there, because it's got to get outside the brain, blood-brain barrier to get some of these more heavy chemicals out. You've got the adrenal glands, which sit, just pack a punch either side of your kidneys. So this is one of the things so the kidneys are your blood filtering things, so you get, you know, good filtering in there. And I also wonder whether some of the chemicals produced there are filtered by the kidneys. So that would be a good point to release them, because they're closer to the travel around the body. I really don't know about them. And you've got different glands, testes and ovaries, you've got this sort of like a loose pen friend system where you tweak to the rest of your body. Now, on the other extreme, you've got your control nerves, sort of like if you flick your fingers or speak. So they're not so much environmental, they're computational nerves. And then you've got the sympathetic nervous system, which allows you to do things like not necessarily change your breath, but do things in a flight or fight response. And then you've got the parasympathetic one, which is just feeding back the rate of life support thing, so it can do a slow dial up things, the parasympathetic things, and it also monitors the gut and the liver and the heart and a bit of the lungs. Just gives a general feedback to sort of like looking at the lights on your dashboard as you're driving along. Tells you the overall health of your car and your vehicles and stuff like that. And of course it's a two-way street. You can send it down. Now, this parasympathetic nervous system you can actually connect to, allegedly, in yoga and breathing and stuff like that. That's why breathing and meditation goes together. The breathing, you panic, you breathe more quickly. So the parasympathetic one can actually produce it, but you can actually run it the opposite way with yoga, meditation, and I know for sure that I've trained myself just obviously I take my blood pressure all the bloody time, and I've trained myself just to get the, obviously if you get a wacko blood pressure, you sit there and go, oh, bloody hell, I've got to do it again. So you can train yourself to relax and to get your blood pressure, and it generally means that you get each one within a couple of cent, repeat it each time. It takes a bit of art there, but you can actually train yourself to relax and calm down. I must admit, I don't know. I'm just really trying to think. Is it Mindler? I really can't remember the exact name for these. This part. So there's part of the actual brain stem, as you call it, the brain stem, which is Mendelian pons. What the pons is? P-O-N-S. Pons. I call it pons. P-O-N-S. And so the nerve plugged into this is the vagus nerve, and from Latin mean wandering nerve. So it's like a nerve you found in there, and it's been known from ancient times. And this nerve, there's a very famous discovery. It's like one of the very first nerves. That what does a nerve do? Well, a nerve sends information to do something, and there's this very famous thing where Galen, he was at one stage, at one point both, he was like the Aristotle of, Aristotle and Pliny the Elder, I think it was, of, the ancient world and sort of describing these things. Well, what the heck is going on here? So I'm just walking and as we're going across, trying not to get killed, as I think that would be a bit of a tragedy. Said, look, I know this nerve stuff. Here's this dog, it's barking, it's really upsetting you. Here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut it open, cut its vagus nerve, and lo and behold, it stopped barking. Now, of course, he selected the vagus nerve, and the barking larynx stuff is a major thing. Now, I sort of became aware of this a little bit when I was having heart surgery. So one of the effects is that if we hit the nerve, which you can do, you can be off with a pacemaker, mate. You know, we can hit this nerve. It's funny to do hit. And you think, oh, bloody hell. Well, it is, unfortunately, it's the aorta. You have to zip open your aorta to put in these things. which is the vagus nerve. And not only does it do that to you, you mightn't speak. It's almost like a comedy speech thing about, I don't know if you've ever seen Black Books, the little, where he swallows the little book of calm, the surgeon comes up and you're all there saying cooperative, and they tell you these more and more extraordinary things. They said, and it can also, you can also lose your ability to speak. Well, what's going on here? And so the vagus nerve goes down, and it's, to me, it's real, it's probably the dumbest nerve in the human body. So it's a long nerve, and it goes all the way down out from your brain stem, right? So it's not really from your spinal cord. Comes out and which all the way down does your heart, a few bits of your heart, sort of like this. Okay, I shouldn't say God, but God says, what's wrong with this animal? Tell me what's wrong with the animal. Well, you can, it just, it's not working because it's got no feedback. So there's no thermostats, nothing to it. You can't access it. And so people have gone in, they almost snap thought putting in the vagus nerve. It's nerve. And you've got that hole. Okay, we can reroute it up. Someone is like wiring an extension. And of course, what had happened is that, fish, of course, obviously, that's what I do like doing is blame it on the fish. When we were fish, it was a bright idea because our gills were down and our heart was just in between our head and our gills and our mouth, and and obviously we weren't breathing. Well, I suppose our lungs are sort of like gills. Except for other things where the gills are. And, so what's happened is it's wired up, and as we've evolved, this vagus nerve has sort of kept track of where we're evolving, so much so that Richard Owen, I do know this one, Richard Owen, who said, let me dissect giraffes. And, of course, what I didn't quite realise is that everyone was descending on these zoos, European zoos, waiting for the animal to die. And so as they died, people would have a lottery to dissect them. And so there was sort of like a gruesome side to 8th or 19th century zoos. They were there, but they were there just to keep the punters in. The money come along, and then they have their scientific thing of basically keeping their specimen warm, waiting for it to carcass. So he'd, Ramon had done from, what's this rather long package coming in here from the zoo? And I can imagine it's all wrapped in brown paper. Obviously a giraffe. Oh, I wonder what it is. A giraffe. And he sort of dissected it. Of course, they're giraffes. Think about it. They've got a very long neck, and their heart is a pretty powerful heart because it's got to plumb. It's like a fire system. It's got to pump that blood all the way up to its head, and of course, giraffes. But my actual theory is that things have evolved to trick the human race into believing in evolution. So there's a couple of giraffes coming along with a cherry picker. There was giraffes which were able to jump, and they said, "Nah, go off with the cherry picker. No jumping up the trees, anything like that. You with a longer neck, you can do, because you're going to really screw up the human race by teaching about evolution." Not quite. I jest in there. But you've got this vagus vagus nerve. Now, the vagus nerve can actually do things. So, in fear, the vagus nerve can be employed to shit your pants. So, the vagus nerve is involved in keeping your tackle dry. And when you're really frightened, the vagus nerve goes, bloody hell, and you shit your pants. So it's a really interesting nerve, and it's not sort of like a nice nerve. It's really embedded, hard to find, easy to nick, and it's a sort of a nerve that I suppose lawyers will love, because, you know, here I do this cosmetic thing, and what do you think of it? I can't speak, because you've actually nicked it. And this sort of is like the central risk nerve, and you think that surgeons do find out about it. And it's one of these complicated things. I just saw someone drive past there. A lot of people actually don't even, I've got no idea of the complexity of life and how things operate. So it's also the one which can make you vomit and various things, and it's associated with arousal, all those emotional things that scientists have only read about. This is all the secret. We've got no emotions, therefore we only work them out by actually doing the equations. And sometimes we get caught out. It's like you're only doing that because you think that's the emotion you should be having. However, you're all that type of stuff. And so it's sort of like the vagus nerve is like hippie central. It's a nerve which wanders throughout the body, responds to the environment, and that you can control by your attitude to life. And it is interesting that you, in extreme fear, so you often have situations of fear. I'm sure people fear me in certain circumstances, but in warfare and I don't know, there's fire emergency situations. I've been in various first responding situations where it's been pretty high adrenaline. You have the adrenaline hitting along, and which is great, but then your vagus nerve is there cutting off your blood supply to your brain. It's like the hippie hipster nerve. But it is something to know that there is actually some sort of science in behind breathing, and meditation and control. It just seems that there's an awful lot of yoga fees that you have to pay to various people along the way to get there, and that you perhaps could do it a different way. And I suppose the thing which sort of stuns me is how much of my life I've been blissfully unaware of my own ignorance and happy. Just, and I think the majority of people are just happily ignorant. And the sort of last thing I want to say is, how do you break it to anyone that you've been ignorant? There's sort of like this, i.e. that you've been scammed by the your education, you've been scammed. And so you have a sort of a combination. What I do really think is that when you you promote people who have got and survey people who are good in the Stockholm syndrome. The Stockholm syndrome is where you have your captors, which are clearly doing you wrong, and you form allegiances for them. You feel loyal. You get all, objectively, group A is harming group B. But after a while, Group B feels sympathetic to Group A and tries to protect Group A. They become dependent, and it's called the Stockholm Syndrome. And when you break away and realize that there's new things to understand, it's always sort of like this wakefulness, this curiosity, this idle humour that you had lived your life so much previously in ignorance, but you turn around to someone else. Hey mate, realize it's this way. And it's a bit of a chilling feeling that they're not, well, people aren't idle about their adherence to a Stockholm syndrome. They are very deadly serious. That's their bread and butter. That's how the world is structured. End of story. And you take your vagus nerve and go elsewhere. Or even if they've heard the slightest amount of it, they'll focus on the, they'll say, tell me exactly how you're ignorant. Tell me exactly something I knew before which differentiates it. Explain me your ignorance in a way that I can understand it. So you keep on going till they understand. They say, they listen, and then I didn't understand it. Oh, I understood that. I now understand it. Now I've heard about it. And they're quite dismissive. So this is a little bit more than you're going through. It is worth going have a little research about the vagus wandering nerve, and it's almost worth augmenting schoolbook diagrams with the spinal, the central nervous system, and a definition that there's within a brain-blood barrier. Tick. Okay, and there's certain nerve cells and nerve structures in the central nervous system, peripheral nervous system, with a few notes that they all don't come out from the spinal cord. Some of them whack into the brain, some of them whack in just above the brain, and that our brain is sort of like a evolutionary slum where the next suburb is built on the foundations of the last one. Yet the basic very low-level brain stuff is actually low-level. The stuff that we had when we were climbing out of the swamp as a fish, whatever it is there. Okay, well, I'm off to this part of the errand. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll see if I can do some other memory work.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. How you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.